Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We have had success with talking to all of the big veteran service organizations. Each week, we speak to American Legion, AMVETS, Hill Vets, and the VFW. And right now, I'm joined by a representative of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, who also happens to be a graduate of the Defense Information School that I went to, Kata Kelleher. Kata, how are you doing this morning?
It's very early, but thank you for having
me.
You
think this is early. Oh, geez, you should have seen it. 5 o'clock when I was up and coming in. Oh, boy. Now, Kata, as I mentioned, you are with the VFW, but prior to that, and people might be able to tell this by the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor tattoo on your bicep, but you served in, the Army, the Air Force? Which branch of service were you in?
Oh, the best branch of service.
You were in the Navy? That's awesome.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Kata, of course, served in the Marine Corps, and tell us a little bit about your service, where you enlisted or where you joined out of, I should say, and then what you did while you were in.
So fun fact, I was actually born at Camp Lejeune. Both my parents are Marines as well. So
I guess
I was doomed.
Yeah. Consigned to your fate.
Ended up, I enlisted out of Buffalo, New York, graduated high school there, and within 10 days landed myself on the yellow footprints of Paris Island. I spent 5 years in the Marine Corps doing public affairs. I was a combat correspondent, mostly did print, dappled into a little bit of radio, which I think you'll figure out I'm not the best at this morning. So did that.
I'm always impressed when a Marine is capable of forming like coherent sentences.
Yeah, I had crayons this morning, so.
You had the right ones.
Breakfast of champions.
Breakfast of champions and Marines. Of course, we kid. We love the Marine Corps. Some of my favorite people are Marines. But so a combat correspondent, you got to do the same job that I got to do in the Navy. And you served for how many years, did you say?
5 years.
And yes. During that time, what's your biggest memory of your service and the thing that you remember the most, or maybe even the thing that you miss the most from when you were serving?
I think the obvious one would have to be deployment to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
That one's a little hard to forget. But having the unique opportunity, I guess, as a combat correspondent to get out and go do cool Marine things, right? Really got to do different types of training that most Marines don't get to do, let alone a female Marine at the time when I was in, when we still had, you know, barriers for different job fields that were open. So at one point, I got to go out and do some coverage. SOTG was going to do wet spy rigging. They're getting their qual. It was the first time anybody who wasn't recon was doing that.
Oh, wow.
Showed up, and one, people were not the happiest to have public affairs there, and then they all just stared at me for a minute like, huh,
what's this?
You're a woman. I'm like, yeah, women have ears too. That was really cool. I got to go out with them for about a week, dangle out of some helicopter bellies and try to take pictures and try not to fall off Zodiacs, get bruised up a bit.
That can be fun stuff.
Yeah,
it can be a little bit hair raising when you're out there doing it. Yeah. But when you're done, you're able to tell people, "Hey, I did this. It was pretty cool." And no, I'm not one of those guys. Yeah. But I got to hang around with them and check out what they were doing. Yeah. Now, when you left the service, when you got out, what do you remember about that period of time in your life? That transition. What was it like for Kata the Marine becoming Kata the civilian?
Yeah. It wasn't the best at first. You know, I've been out for 5 years now, and I've had a successful transition out of the military over the 5 years. But at first, everybody faces different barriers with transition, getting out, trying to adjust to civilian life. I got out very, very shortly after a 10-month deployment to Afghanistan. And not to emphasize too much on gender-specific things, but women, I think, face different barriers, whether it's just trying to better understand, how to buy a female suit to go on a job interview, or if, you're a little more aggressive as a female Marine and you're finding out it's not okay to put guys in chokeholds when you're drunk at a bar. and it's a little hard to make friends, right?
Right.
and just trying to adjust to being a somewhat normal civilian and making friends with people that don't have those experiences.
Right. And now that I'm part of a team down here where everybody's a veteran, it's a little bit different. But prior to that, working in New York City at a radio station, there was one other veteran there. He was a Marine. And the two of us would sometimes talk about things like that. Like, boy, this is weird, isn't it? The fact that we just, the two of us, we can talk about things. We would use acronyms. I mean, it was almost like we had our own little private language that nobody else in the building could understand. So that is always a unique time. But I think you're right that females, and again, this is me as a male thinking, just from what I've heard, from what I've seen, from what I've perceived, females do often have extra barriers in their way when they transition out. Not only that, but then do you also get the people who come up to you and be like, you were in the Marine Corps? Like, you?
Yes.
It's too bad we're not on video right now, because the look in your eyes as you said that.
One of the most infuriating moments, right? Bless my mother. She was a very proud mom. And I think for about 2.5 years after I came home from deployment, in her eyes, I just came home from Afghanistan. There was no difference.
Right.
So she would go out and have some cocktails and tell everybody, this is my daughter. She's a Marine. She just came home from Afghanistan. I'm like, oh, it's been like a year and a half. But I would have people come up to me and be like, oh, you were in the Marine Corps? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you're pretty short to be a Marine. I'm like, yeah.
It's only the Coast Guard that has a height requirement.
Right. No, Marine Corps does too. I barely made it, but I made it. And they would ask me, they would typically tell me, like, oh, but you're a woman, so you didn't have to go through boot camp. I'm like, no, we go through the same recruit training. Yeah. It's 13 weeks. Like, but it can't be the actual same. Like, no, seriously, I have the same training as the males. There's no difference. And they would give me a hard time. They'd be like, oh, Afghanistan, you must have sat on a big base. Hmm. I'm like, let's talk about this. I am not upset that you decided not to join, right? That is a personal choice. But you didn't join, so you don't get to tell me about my deployment and what I may or may not have done.
and whether I'm right or wrong about.
You don't get to decide if I was, as we would call, a fobbit or not, or if I was out on the patrol bases and doing things.
Yeah.
And either way, it's perfectly acceptable no matter what a service member does on their deployment. It's not like they're necessarily choosing. You still took that oath.
One of the funniest things, I was just shocked by it, that I ever experienced was in relation to the Marine Corps, where I had a young lady of, 19, 20 years old at college, good old Hofstra University up in New York. And she informed me, who she did not know as a veteran at the time, that Marines were waterboarded shortly after they arrived at Parris Island as part of their boot camp training. I was like, waterboarded, you say? And it's very interesting.
SEER training's part of boot camp.
Yeah. At Parris, you get off the bus. First thing, those yellow footprints, they yell at you and they're like, all right, now everybody get on these boards. We're going to waterboard you. And that's how it goes. Now, Kata, of course, left the Marine Corps and is currently here to represent the VFW. So how did you get involved with the VFW?
So I got involved with the VFW via being sassy. Worked out very well. I was going to school at American University. There was an event that I was invited to that had nothing to do with anything I understood. I was studying psychology and public health at the time, and I think I was told it was like an economy meeting, veteran-based. I didn't want to go, but I did go, and I was slightly bored until a couple of VSO, Veteran Service Organization representatives, started talking, and I was trying to listen to them, but was honestly focused on the fact that I was like, I don't know anything about economics. and then who is now my boss started talking, and he was like, my name's Carlos. I work at the VFW, and I cover healthcare legislation for veterans. And I was like,
that's more interesting.
Interesting. So according to him, I was giving him just like the death stare for the remainder of that time. He now understands that's my I'm thinking face. So beelined it to him after that, and he asked what he did wrong. I shook his hand, told him who I was, who another person I work with at the VFW now, Ryan, started talking about veterans transition issues and TAPS. So I very abruptly cut them off and told them, no, the real issue we need to focus on is TBI PTSD and doing more mental health research. Mm. And they were like, who are you? And I was like, well, I'm Kate Kelleher. I'm going to make a difference, I guess. asked Carlos for his card. He didn't have one, according to him. So I went and got somebody else's card and handed him a pencil. I'm like, write your email down. Emailed him. He asked me for my resume. I didn't have one. So I was like, oh, give me a few days and I'll get back to you on that. Sent him my resume. Went on break from school. So took a trip and was in Sweden, actually. And he emailed me and he's like, hey, do you want to do a fellowship? When can you start? And I was like, yes, I'll be back Tuesday. So like 3 days after that, did a fellowship. And they've been stuck with me ever since. I'm associate director over there now.
And the associate director of healthcare legislation. And we're going to talk now about this month, September, is Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. Yesterday, we talked to Joe Schinelli, a fellow former Marine of yours, executive director of AMVETS and my classmate at the Defense Information School, who has lost eight of his Marines that he served with to suicide. He also, in his personal life, told us yesterday he lost his mother to suicide. This is a significant issue within the community, specifically within those who deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, which you would know as a member of the VFW, as someone who was deployed to, I'm going to guess, Helmand Province, Camp Leatherneck, that kind of area.
Helmand, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So I was up north, Mazar-i-Sharif. But obviously, we see that this is an issue, and when it comes to issues that affect our warfighters, those who are boots on the ground over there, the VFW often takes the lead on those issues. So my question to you is, what is the VFW doing to assist the veteran community in, you know, not killing themselves, to be quite frank?
So aside from legislation, which I will not bore you and everybody listening in on, which we do work a lot on, VFW, we have many different priorities. And last year, we really wanted to make an emphasis on mental health care. We realized one of the problems was a lack of understanding what resources were available. And part of that, we feel like, comes from just the stigma associated with mental health and with people asking for the help that they do need. So we launched what we call our mental wellness campaign. We partnered with five different organizations that focus on mental health, which it's still very early in the morning, so I will try to remember which ones they are. The Elizabeth Dole Foundation, so we can also assist with caregivers, military and veteran caregivers. Given our patients like me, One Mind, and Walgreens. So we partnered, and VA as well. So we partnered with all these organizations, and we set out to tell them the five signs on noticing if somebody is in mental health crisis or if they're in distress. So you can notice, like, hey, my buddy over here, I think he's actually upset. I think something's bugging him. I should reach out. And we educated them on resources. We had a big volunteer day where posts from around the world, literally we had posts in a total of five different countries throughout the United States, Asia, Europe, all over the place, partake in this day. And not every post, but the VA did come out to a lot of them, as well as some representatives from these organizations we partnered with. And we taught them, one, again, the five signs, being able to notice when somebody is in mental health distress. Two, what the resources are available to them, both in VA as well as in their local communities, because not every time, you know, if you're in a rural area or if you're out of the country, you're not going to have that access to quick VA care. And really just like focusing on the buddy system and being a friend and having that, you know, we take care of our own mentality and being able to talk about things and breaking down the barriers of the stigma so people are just more comfortable and empowered. We had a heartbreaking but amazing story where our commander-in-chief last year, Brian Duffy, he was informed that after the Mental Health Awareness Day that we hosted, and we're hosting one again next month, there was a gentleman, I don't know how old he was, but he was apparently contemplating suicide. And he was having a rough time. He went home. He got his gun out, which is the most common way that veterans choose to die by suicide. And he actually had the gun out and put the gun down and pulled out a piece of literature, a pamphlet that he had gotten at the Mental Health Awareness Day from his post, and decided to call the Veteran Crisis Line and get help instead of, you know.
Yeah. The opposite,
yeah.
And, you know, ending everything. And that is a scourge of the veteran community, and specifically those who deployed to places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And we're speaking to Kata Kelleher. Kata is a former Marine who's currently working with the VFW. She's the Assistant Director of Healthcare Legislation over there. And of course, September is Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. I really think it's more an awareness month, because Suicide Prevention Month should be every month. And you work in legislation for healthcare, which would include suicide prevention and awareness. But really, there's only so much you could do legislatively. This is something that we need to do as veterans for each other. If you notice something, it's the best course of action is for you to be the help for that fellow Marine, that fellow sailor, soldier, airman, guardsman. I mean, and I know it's your job to deal with legislation, but the most effective means of preventing suicide is being there for each other, right?
Yeah, prevention and intervention. You know, suicide, while it is overwhelmingly a problem in the veteran community, it is an American issue, right? Nobody is shielded from it. VA has found that while their different therapy programs that they offer and all the different resources they have, they are very beneficial. VA also offers, it's called peer-to-peer support. And it's not specific to just mental health. You know, they have it for their homeless veteran programs, different rehabilitation programs, and they find it is overwhelmingly successful, right? Peer-to-peer support, essentially, they'll bring in a veteran who has overcame something, right? Mm. So in suicide prevention intervention, a veteran who has overcame mental health crisis and has steered down the healthier road of not having the desire to die by suicide anymore. So they'll bring these individuals in, and they can do group therapies. They can help with one-on-one therapy. And veterans say that helps. Just it's through the roof, the success rates, because now you're talking to a veteran who understands and has been through it, right?
Right.
It's not that there's anything wrong with talk therapy, right? I think it's great. I've done it plenty. But instead of going in and talking in a more formal setting, you're talking to somebody who, you know, may have been in the same area of Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, wherever you were, and they've had the same mental health issues as you, and they've overcame it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there for you. So it's great.
We've talked to so many people on this show. I can name probably four or five just off the top of my head without thinking too hard about it, who had things gone just a little bit differently would not be here. People mm-hmm. who had not just the gun out, the gun in their mouth at one point. People who, you know, they had to be hospitalized because of suicide attempts that, had they not been found when they were, would be gone. And the interesting thing about all of those people is these are amazing people doing amazing things. We're talking about professional mixed martial arts fighters. We're talking about veterans advocates. We're talking about just a wide variety of people who, had they been lost to suicide, wouldn't have been able to do any of the amazing things they've done from that point on. And that's important, isn't it? That we keep these people out there. It's never too late. No. As long as you're still alive, it's only too late when it's done. As long as you're still alive, there is a chance for you to get back to where you need to be and become, in some cases, the best version of yourself. As odd as that may sound, some people get to that low and then come back with a vengeance after it, but only do so if we're able to keep them from going the full distance with suicide, right?
Yeah. I think it is beautiful and incredibly important that people that have overcame, you know, the desire to die by suicide or any mental health illnesses or crisis, to talk about it, right? For so long, it's been stigmatized. It's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, back in the 80s and beforehand, when it was stigmatized to have diabetes, right? Now we think that's ludicrous, right?
Yeah.
That's nothing to be ashamed of. And we need to keep talking about mental health and an open and comfortable environment, like it is no big deal, because it really is a big deal to the individual suffering, but over half of the adult population, and that's Americans, not even just veterans specific, suffer from mental health issues at one point in time in their life. So we need to keep these conversations open, so that people don't, they may feel alone, but they can see, hey, other people have been through this,
right?
And they trucked along and they made it, right? These were the resources they used. And they didn't think that there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. They didn't think there was any way of getting out of this. And look at how awesome they're doing. And I think it's wonderful seeing all of these people come out now and talk about, you know, I was at rock bottom. I didn't think that there was any getting out. All I wanted to do was die. But one day I got up and I called the Veteran Crisis Line. Or one day my buddy came over and kicked me in the behind on air, and was like, hey, you need to fix yourself. Check yourself before you wreck yourself, right? And whatever it was that they needed to do, they found a way to overcome it, right? And I think that, and I hope that gives other people hope, right? With realizing that they're not alone. Right, they might feel alone, but they're not, and there are people that love them and care for them and want to help.
Right. September is National Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month, and of course, the fact that somewhere around, and you can argue about the numbers, but it's really being facetious, somewhere around 20 veterans every day take their own life on average. So a serious issue that continues to affect the veteran community. We've been talking about it with Kata Kelleher. Kata is the Assistant Director of Healthcare Legislation over at the Veterans of Foreign Wars, as she is a VFW member herself, a Marine who served in Afghanistan. And Kata, when it comes to that legislative aspect, is there anything that you think can be done on a legislative level, on that official government level, to address this issue?
I don't think there's necessarily a magical bill that is going to solve veteran suicide issues, but there's definitely legislation we can work on to provide VA and other community partners with the assets that they need to help combat veteran suicide. Right now, the entire country is in a shortage of mental health providers. That's a worldwide shortage, if you want to be completely honest, right? But we need to make sure that, you know, Congress and the Senate are providing VA with what they need to hire an adequate amount of mental health care providers, right? Don't direct quote me on this, even though we're on the radio. I believe after the Phoenix crisis, mental health providers, they saw an 87% drop in applications to VA for psychologists, psychiatrists, and social worker therapists.
Right.
So we need to make sure that VA has what they need there to have those providers so that veterans can have access to mental health care. Increasing and maintaining peer-to-peer support, making sure that the infrastructure is there so that they have adequate bed space and inpatient, outpatient facilities for different mental health services.
Right.
Making sure they have the resources to do proper outreach, making sure the Veteran Crisis Line is manned enough, which they've come so far after they initially opened up the one in upstate New York, and now they have the Atlanta call center as well. So while you can't necessarily legislate how to 100% eradicate veteran suicide, we can legislate to make sure that VA and the community providers have the assets they need to do as much as they can to assist in prevention and, when necessary, intervention.
We've been speaking with Kata Kelleher. Kata is the Assistant Director of Healthcare Legislation at the VFW. And before we go, if people are interested in finding out more about what the VFW is doing in a legislative sense, where can they go to find out?
They could go to vfw.org. That is our main website. We do have a tab right there for advocacy, and you can go and see different areas that we're working on. Also, if they are located in Washington, D.C., or if they're in Kansas City, our offices are both open to all members and people interested.
Well, Kata, thank you so much for your time today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.